Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
An urgent plea from Ukraine and a stunning admission from the Russians. I'm Kelly Evans, in for Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
It's going to be a long slog.
A new assessment of the war as Putin eyes a new offensive. Tonight, how the U.S. is helping Ukraine prepare and fight back. Ceiling shattered.
The yeas are 53, the nays are 47, and this nomination is confirmed.
America's first black woman Supreme Court justice. The history made by Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. Scandal at the Secret Service. Four agents placed on leave after the FBI uncovers an alleged scheme involving money and fake cops. Solving a pandemic mystery. Why some people just can't get COVID.
Is the needle in the haystack problem?
Meet the doctor trying to find the answer that could help us all. Two more coaches join a landmark lawsuit against the NFL. Caught on camera, a dramatic plane crash on a Georgia highway. And the comeback story begins. Tigers first round at Augusta.
Live from CNBC. The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
Good evening. Ukraine making a desperate plea to the West as Russia focuses and intensifies its assault on eastern Ukraine. We need weapons, weapons, and more weapons now. Ukraine's top diplomat says the battle for Donbas will be reminiscent of World War II, with thousands of tanks, warplanes, and armored vehicles on the battlefield. He's urging NATO allies to help before it's too late.
Either you help us now, and I'm speaking about days, not weeks, or your help will come too late. And many people will die. Many civilians will lose their homes. Many villages will be destroyed.
The Pentagon confirming for the first time today that the United States is providing intelligence to Ukrainian forces in the Donbas region. And the Kremlin making a stunning admission today. Vladimir Putin's spokesman conceded that Russian troops have suffered heavy losses in Ukraine in an interview with our sister network, Sky News.
You've lost thousands of troops. How many troops have you lost?
We have significant losses of troops, and it's a huge tragedy for us.
Previously, Moscow had claimed fewer than 1,400 Russian soldiers have died in Ukraine. NATO estimates as many as 15,000 have actually been killed. Meantime, in a stunning rebuke, the United Nations has voted to kick Russia off the Human Rights Council in response to the mass killing of civilians in Bucha, a recently recaptured suburb of Kyiv. The Washington Post reports Germany's intelligence service intercepted radio communications in which Russian soldiers discuss carrying out indiscriminate killings in Ukraine. Listen to this.
Валите всех нахуй там, ёбаный в рот, блядь.
Я понял.
Ukrainian intelligence claims this is intercepted audio of a Russian commander telling a soldier to take out Ukrainian civilians during an attack in the city of Mariupol. NBC News cannot independently verify the recording. We begin tonight's coverage with NBC's Ali Roussi in the city of Lviv in western Ukraine. Ali?
Good evening, Kelly. Well, U.S. defense officials are saying that all the Russian troops and units have left the Kyiv and Chernihiv area, that they have gone into Russia or Belarus, where they are redeploying, rearming, and depending on how depleted they are, they're going to head back to the Donbas area. They're not sure when that's going to be, but they think it's sooner rather than later. And they're expecting an all-out assault in the Donbas area. The Ukrainian foreign minister said that he thinks thousands of tanks are going to be heading into there for a huge attack in that area. And that's why Ukrainian officials are telling people to get out of the Donbas area while they can, before before that attack starts, before they get trapped in there, like people in Mariupol have been trapped in that city, hemmed in by Russian troops, unable to get out. And Mariupol is a cascading humanitarian disaster. People are in desperate need of aid in there and desperately need to get out. I spoke to a woman who managed to escape Mariupol 2 weeks ago. Let's take a listen to what she had to say.
It seems to me that the situation in Mariupol is much worse than in Bucha, much worse. We were just being erased from the face of the earth. We were bombed. All buildings are burned down. Our city is completely destroyed. They are talking about rebuilding the city. I don't know, but I think it will be difficult to rebuild. It's just a ghost city now.
And it's because of places like Mariupol that Ukrainian officials are saying that they need advanced weapons. They need tanks. They need anti-aircraft systems. They need airplanes to fight the Russians off so the Russians don't annihilate other cities like they have in Mariupol so they can fend off the Russian attack in their country. Kelly?
Ali, thanks. Retired Lieutenant General Steph Twitty now awarded the Silver Star for bravery in Iraq. General, thanks. Ukrainians say they need more weapons. How should the West be responding?
Well, I think you're going to find that the West is going to respond in a big measure. It was good to hear the announcement from the Czech Republic as well as the Germans commit to sending tanks and armored vehicles to the Ukrainians. I think those are well on their way. The U.S. is committed to getting more weapon systems in there. The S-300 will soon start to arrive in Ukraine as well. And so I think that that NATO and our Western allies, they're getting behind this fight, and you're starting to see the flow of weapons coming in. I want to warn you, Kelly, that this is going to be a sustained hard fight for the Ukrainians. And so keeping up that weapons flow will be key.
On that note, there are a lot of questions about where and how long the fighting goes on from here. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Milley said this today.
There's a significant battle yet ahead down in the southeast, down around the Donbass, Donetsk region, where the Russians intend to mass forces and continue their assault. So I think it's an open question right now how this ends.
How do you see it ending?
Well, to be quite honest, Kelly, I don't see it ending anytime soon. Let me just describe to you what the Ukrainians will face here. Down in the Donbass, it is wide open, fields, woodland, so forth. A vastly different fight than what the Ukrainians fought around Kyiv. They will need to have long-range systems. They'll need the mass fires to be able to fight this fight. And it's going to be a long slugfest. You must remember, the Russians have been in there since 2014. They've been fighting in the Donbass. You have Russian separatist groups that have also been in there, along with Wagner Group. So the Russians are familiar with this terrain. They were not familiar with the terrain in Kyiv, so they're somewhat an advantage to the Russians here.
Well, NATO estimates, as we reported, that as many as 15,000 Russians have already been killed during the invasion. How many more troops can they afford to lose?
Well, we use a calculation of 70%, you're combat ineffective. Of course, we really don't know how many troops the Russians have lost. And so we just need to keep an eye on that. What we do know is that Russia has a pretty large army. My more concern is the Ukrainians. Ukrainians have a force of about 200,000. Every day that goes by, they're losing that professional force in the battlefield from soldiers either being killed or casualties on the battlefield. So we have to watch them as well, because it's hard to train a professional force. It takes months. And even though they have civilians stepping up to the battlefield, you want that core to be that professional army.
But you are braced for potentially a years-long war here?
I am. We also must remember all these bombs that are falling on the civilian population. The population, as you can imagine, they're pretty angry. So I also see an insurgency brewing out of this fight as well. And so if an insurgency comes about, you can expect a long, protracted war.
Lieutenant General, thanks for sharing your thoughts and analysis tonight. A rare moment of unity on Capitol Hill today. Congress passing two bipartisan bills to punish Russia and inflict economic pain for the invasion of Ukraine. Lawmakers overwhelmingly voting to ban Russian oil and gas imports. They also passed a bill to revoke Russia's normal trade status with the United States. That would allow President Biden to slap high tariffs on various Russian goods from steel and aluminum products to further weaken the Russian economy. Both bills now heading to the president's desk for his signature. And Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson making history today as the first black woman confirmed to the Supreme Court.
On this vote, the yeas are 53, the nays are 47, and this nomination is confirmed.
Senate Democrats cheered and gave a standing ovation after the vote. Three Republican senators broke ranks to support Judge Jackson's confirmation. Judge Jackson and President Biden watched the vote unfold together at the White House. They hugged as the final tally confirmed she would become a justice for the highest court in the land. NBC's Sahil Kapoor reporting live on Capitol Hill. Sahil, Jackson's confirmation won't change the balance of the Supreme Court, but it's still a historic moment for the nation.
That's absolutely right. There was joy, there was elation, there was rapturous applause inside the chamber where I was just standing, a line a mile long of guests waiting to get inside and witness that historic moment. The final vote was 53 to 47, the 50 Democratic members joined by three Republican senators, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and Mitt Romney. And we witnessed the extraordinary sight of the first black woman vice president in American history announcing the confirmation of the first black woman ever to be a justice on the Supreme Court. Let's play what Kamala Harris had to say about that.
We achieved, long overdue, but we achieved this important milestone. I think it makes a very important statement about who we aspire to be, who we are, who we believe ourselves to be. It's a statement about that on our highest court in the land, we want to make sure that there's going to be full representation and the finest and brightest and the best.
Now, liberals are thrilled with this moment, but it is not all good news for liberals. It is still a 6-3 conservative court, the most conservative in about a century. Coming before this court are cases where the right is expected to notch big victories in the coming months. That includes abortion rights, affirmative action, religious schools and taxpayer funding. And that 6-3 conservative majority would not be disrupted by the addition of Judge Jackson when she becomes Justice Jackson. That is expected to happen in June or July. At the end of the Supreme Court's current term, she will replace Justice Stephen Breyer. And, of course, shortly after that, we will have a midterm election that determines which party controls the Senate and oversees potential future Supreme Court confirmations. Kelly?
Sahil, thank you so much. Two men accused of posing as federal agents, the details of how they almost pulled it off, and how members of the First Lady's Secret Service detail are involved. Saudi Arabia's crown prince accused of having a hand in the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. And today, the decision to move the trial that the Khashoggi family says means justice will never be served. And GM making a big bet on its electric version of the Hummer. But will it pay off for the company? CNBC's Phil LeBeau takes it for a ride.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Two people in the nation's capital pretended to be federal agents and convinced actual federal agents that they were the real deal. That from prosecutors in D.C., charging them with false impersonation of an officer of the United States. An FBI agent says the men spent more than 2 years lying about working for the Department of Homeland Security. He says they told people they worked for a covert special task force investigating gang violence and the January 6th insurrection. Now, four Secret Service agents are on leave after allegedly accepting gifts from the men, including a drone and a gun locker. And according to court documents, one of those Secret Service agents assigned to First Lady Jill Biden's security detail. CNBC's Shamari Stone is live in Washington outside the apartment building where the suspects were living. Shamari?
Well, good evening, Kelly. Federal prosecutors tell us that one of the two suspects claimed to have ties to Pakistani intelligence. And the FBI tells us that they lived here in this luxury building behind me. But also, the FBI is claiming that people out here are trying to figure out how did this happen, and the neighbors are surprised.
It's pretty shocking to everyone that lives here.
This man, who doesn't want to be identified, reacts to federal prosecutors charging his neighbors, 40-year-old Arian Taharzadeh and 36-year-old Haider Ali, with falsely impersonating federal agents.
These were two guys who were around all the time. People recognized them. They were very friendly and said hi to everyone in the building and really tried to integrate themselves into the community.
Federal prosecutors say they deceive people, including Secret Service agents, giving them gifts. One agent worked on First Lady Dr. Jill Biden's security detail.
Did you suspect that they would allegedly do something like this?
No, not at all. I mean, they went out of their way. They were actually very good neighbors.
More than a dozen FBI agents arrested his neighbors yesterday evening. These are some pictures of Arian Taharzadeh from the arrest warrant against him, posing in a uniform and tactical gear. He's accused of providing Secret Service officers and agents with rent-free apartments, including a penthouse worth over $40,000 a year, along with a drone, iPhones, surveillance systems, a TV, and policing tools. The Secret Service says its agents have been placed on administrative leave during this investigation.
It's alarming, especially for this area.
Lamar Myers lives near the suspects, a few blocks away from the U.S. Capitol.
It's super disturbing, and because it's right next to the Capitol, it makes you think, like, I mean, it can happen anywhere. So, I'm glad it's been rectified.
Really just nice guys, so it's very shocking.
Shamari, thanks. Now, a year ago, U.S. intelligence officials released a report accusing Saudi Arabia's crown prince of approving an operation in Turkey to kill or capture journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Today, a Turkish court announced Khashoggi's murder trial will now move to Saudi Arabia. It signals a likely end to the case that sparked global outrage back in 2018. Judges reportedly granted the transfer last week because none of the 26 Saudi suspects are in Turkish custody. Khashoggi had been critical of the country's government and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. 4 years ago, Turkish officials say the Washington Post columnist walked into the Saudi consulate in Istanbul to get documents he needed to marry his fiancée. He never came back out. Turkish officials accused Saudi agents of murdering him and dismembering his body. Today, his fiancée slammed the move. She said now that the case is in Saudi Arabia's hands, nobody expects justice for his killing. Developing news out of Israel, officials there say a gunman killed at least two people and injured eight others in Tel Aviv. It happened in this area where there were crowded bars and restaurants. Israeli police urging people to avoid the area. They said there are indications it was a terrorist attack. The militant group Hamas praised the shooting but did not claim responsibility. This is the latest in a string of deadly attacks in Israel. Last week, a gunman killed five people in an ultra-Orthodox neighborhood outside of Tel Aviv. This video reportedly shows him walking the streets. Police say officers eventually shot and killed him. The deadly shootings come about a year after the latest clashes between Israelis and Palestinians. That sparked the 11-day Gaza war that killed hundreds of people. A discrimination lawsuit against the NFL is growing. The two coaches joining forces with Brian Flores and what they're accusing teams and the league of doing. And Walmart trying to shore up a hole in the supply chain, a shortage of truck drivers, the deal the company is rolling out.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Two more black coaches joining Brian Flores in suing the NFL. They're accusing the league of racial discrimination in its hiring practices. Steve Wilks was the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals back in 2018, and Ray Horton is a longtime NFL defensive assistant coach. All three coaches say teams discriminated against them in different ways, but a large part of their lawsuit takes aim at the league's Rooney Rule. It requires every team to interview a minority candidate for all head coach, general manager, and top assistant coach positions. Lawyers for Wilks say the Tennessee Titans gave him a sham interview just so the team would comply, and the attorneys are backing up those claims with comments from a podcast. CNBC's Perry Russum explains.
It's being called the smoking gun in the race discrimination lawsuit against the NFL, a podcast from 2020 with former Tennessee Titans head coach Mike Mularkey revealing how he says he was hired.
The ownership there, Amy Adams Strunk and her family, came in and told me I was going to be the head coach in 2016 before they went through the Rooney Rule.
Longtime NFL coach Ray Horton interviewed for that job in Tennessee. He's now joining Brian Flores in suing the NFL. In the updated civil complaint filed today, it reads Horton's interview was illegitimate and an orchestrated attempt to make it appear that the Titans had complied with the Rooney Rule. In the podcast Steelers Realm, Mularkey called it the biggest regret of his career.
Well, I sat there knowing I was the head coach in 16 as they went through this fake hiring process, knowing a lot of the coaches that they were interviewing, knowing how much they prepared to go through those interviews, knowing that everything they could do and they had no chance of getting that job.
In the complaint, it reads Horton was subjected to a blatantly sham interview due to his race.
And actually, the GM, John Robinson, he was in on the interview with me. He had no idea why he's interviewing me, that I have the job already.
The Titans are countering Mularkey's statement, saying in part no decision was made and no decision was communicated prior to the completion of all interviews. Today, Steve Wilks is also adding his name and story to the lawsuit. In the complaint, it claims Wilks was hired in 2018 by the Arizona Cardinals as a bridge coach, keeping the seat warm until the team was in a better place to succeed and a new coach is hired. After going 3-13, Wilks was fired after one season and replaced by Cliff Kingsbury, the former head coach at Texas Tech, who had no NFL coaching experience. In the lawsuit, it claims Wilks' firing was unjust and Kingsbury, who is white, was given a better chance to succeed. In a statement from the Arizona Cardinals, it reads in part, "The decisions we made after the 2018 season were very difficult ones. We are confident that the facts reflect that and demonstrate that these allegations are untrue."
And today, Brian Flores added the Houston Texans to the list of teams that he says discriminated against him. He says after he sued the NFL, the Texans removed him from their list of head coaching candidates. The Texans say that their search was thorough. Kelly.
Perry Russum, thanks. According to the FAA, the skies have gotten a lot less friendly. Now lawmakers are trying to do something about it. The bipartisan bill that would create a whole new type of no-fly list. And millions of people have tested positive for COVID, but others have managed to completely avoid it. In some cases, against all odds and close contact. Meet one of the doctors trying to understand why. And fentanyl showing up in powders and pills all over the country. Overdoses increasing as police make some major busts. We visit one of the states where the problem is worse than ever. The Hummer is back, and it's leaving its gas-guzzling days in the dust. General Motors rolling out all-electric versions of the iconic truck. Hummer EV pickups and SUVs, they are not cheap. Prices range from about $80,000 to $110,000, depending on the model. But the massive price tag hasn't stopped buyers from lining up. General Motors reports it's received more than 65,000 orders, although some of the models won't be available till 2024. GM officials touting it as a game changer for the company and for the electric vehicle market. Phil LeBeau covers autos for us. Phil, you got to take the new electric Hummer for a spin in Arizona. Does it live up to the hype?
It does. It's an impressive vehicle. Look, it has the power. It has the speed. It's a true off-roading SUT truck because it is a truck. It has a little bit of a flatbed in the back. And if you are somebody who is looking for the ultimate, if you will, in terms of an off-road truck, the Hummer is for you. So they don't sell you short. You get your money's worth for that $70,000, $80,000 up to $110,000.
What about the crab walk we've heard and seen so much about, Phil? Does that serve a real purpose, or is it just a fun thing to do?
Well, some are calling it a party trick. Look, there are limited instances where you're going to be able to use the crab walk legitimately. You can only do it in small or low miles per hour. You can't do it at like 30 or 40 miles per hour. And if you're in an unusual parking situation, yeah, you might use the crab walk at that point. I think it's a smart move for them to market it the way they do because it gets a lot of people talking. Hey, have you seen the crab walk? Have you driven the Hummer with the crab walk? I think that in the end, you're not going to see many people actually using it in real life, but it's a smart move by GM to advertise.
As we mentioned, not all the models will be available right away. How does the Hummer compare to other competitors?
Well, for General Motors, it's critical because this is the first electric vehicle on the new Ultium battery that the company is rolling out that will be the basis for all of its electric vehicles. If you look at the market share for electric vehicles in the United States, yes, it's growing. It's still very small, but it's growing. But look at it. It's dominated by Tesla. They sell 3 out of every 4 electric vehicles in this country. GM's not even in the top 4. If you look at the list, you got Hyundai, Volkswagen, and Ford. Now, they're well behind Tesla. GM needs to catch up, and this is the beginning of a slew of EVs, Kelly, that are going to be rolling out over the next couple of years from General Motors. They need these vehicles to connect, to convince people that they can compete with Tesla.
And with the crab walk in their corner. Phil, thank you very much. A tight labor market has jobless claims nearly evaporating. That's what's topping CNBC's On the Money. New claims for unemployment benefits fell to just 166,000 last week. That's new data from the Labor Department. Compare that with exactly 2 years ago as the pandemic started to surge. Weekly claims topped 6 million. Now they're at their lowest since November of 1968. Walmart raising pay to attract new truck drivers, dangling as much as $110,000 for new drivers. The recruitment push comes as e-commerce sales surge and stores and warehouses become tougher to restock. Last year, industry data shows the trucker shortage topped 80,000 drivers, an all-time high. And Apple taking its first bite out of live sports. Tomorrow night, Major League Baseball is coming to Apple TV+. 2 games exclusive every Friday night. For now, Apple says the games will be available without a subscription. Each broadcast will feature Apple product tie-ins, better walk-up songs. Those will be available on Apple Music. And Siri will be there with all your baseball trivia. On Wall Street, the market's rebounding slightly after 2 days of heavy losses. The Dow up 87, the S&P up 19, even the NASDAQ up 8. I'm Kelly Evans on CNBC. It's half past the hour. Here's what's making the news.
Millions contracting COVID, and others seem immune to catching it. Now doctors trying to find out why. Rush hour traffic takes a turn when a plane crash lands in the middle of a highway. But first, a cross-country warning about drugs laced with fentanyl.
As we reported, law enforcement seized a record number of fentanyl pills last year, nearly 10 million. That's from a new study funded by the National Institute on Drug Abuse. Over the past 3 years, fentanyl busts increased more than 3,000%. A major one in Southern California just last month. Officials there say they arrested and charged 2 men who had enough fentanyl, get this, to kill 4.7 million people. That's roughly equivalent to the entire population of Los Angeles and San Francisco combined. America's fentanyl crisis is impacting communities across the country. But in Southern Oregon, cops say the problem there is worse than ever. CNBC's Eamon Javers reports.
When I was about 12 years old, I tried methamphetamine for the first time.
By his own account, Brandon Orr shouldn't be here.
I've overdosed 7 times on heroin. It progressed and just kept getting harder and harder and harder until I started committing felonies, losing friendships.
The 42-year-old knows personally the devastating impact of fentanyl in Southern Oregon. He's lost dozens of friends. And in 2020, he lost his brother.
He got a hold of an oxycodone that was laced with fentanyl, and he passed away after 2 hits of it.
Brandon now works with Stephanie Mendenhall as a manager at the Recovery Cafe, a nonprofit alternative treatment center that says it's helped countless people overcome their addiction, but has seen a frightening rise in recent years of fentanyl overdoses.
A lot of things are laced with fentanyl, and people are dying who don't even struggle with addiction.
We know from just talking to people on the street in our drug unit that fentanyl is what people are after.
Lieutenant Mike Boudreau with Medford, Oregon Police says the amount of fentanyl seized in his city has surged.
They are no longer looking for the heroin. They really not even looking for the meth much anymore. It's really fentanyl is the drug of choice for Southern Oregon right now.
In all of last year, Medford police seized 11,000 fentanyl pills and a little more than a pound of powder. In just the first 3 months of 2022, though, they've confiscated over 30,000 pills and almost a pound and a half of powder. Police say Oregon's decision to decriminalize drug possession last year has only complicated matters.
Somebody could have 50 doses of fentanyl and it's only a violation, so they can't be arrested. Usually people need a catalyst to get them into treatment, and usually that catalyst is going to be facing jail time, and we don't necessarily have that anymore.
Brandon Orr was arrested years before the law was passed. He says his almost 2 years in prison saved his life. Orr's been clean and sober 5 years now and is dedicated to saving lives, still painfully aware of the one life he can't save.
I saw my little brother for the first time since I've been out of prison. I saw him one or two times, you know, around the way. But he was living a different life than me. He didn't look good. And I really wish that I could have said something to him then. We don't have to live like this anymore.
Oregon became the first state in America to decriminalize possession of personal use drugs. It's being looked at as a model for other states. Some critics have called the law too lenient, especially with the recent spike in fentanyl-related overdoses and deaths. But supporters say it's already had a positive effect by directing more funds into drug treatment centers. Kelly?
Eamon Javers, thanks. Conspiracy theorist Alex Jones paying $75,000 in fines before finally showing up for questioning in a defamation case. That's according to court documents. They show he did sit for a deposition in Connecticut yesterday and Tuesday. Jones said lawyers grilled him for 10 hours. Families of the Sandy Hook shooting victims sued him and won. This deposition is related to an upcoming trial to determine how much he'll have to pay the family. In the wake of the deadly shooting, the InfoWars host spread a conspiracy theory that it never happened. He's since walked back those claims. His lawyer said he couldn't originally sit for a deposition because of health issues. A judge ordered him to pay a $25,000 fine, increasing by another $25,000 each day he skipped questioning. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has tested positive for COVID. Her spokesman announced it today. Pelosi stood just inches away from President Biden at a bill signing event yesterday. They were also together on Tuesday. Neither wore masks, but the White House insists the president is not considered a close contact, according to CDC guidelines. The White House says President Biden tested negative last night and will continue to get tested regularly. It's unclear if that means he'll get tested again tonight. Pelosi's spokesman says she doesn't have any symptoms right now. He says the 82-year-old is fully vaccinated and boosted. And the race is on to solve one of COVID's greatest mysteries, why some people just can't catch the virus, even after countless exposures. We're now more than 2 years into the pandemic. Hundreds of millions of people have tested positive, and variants have only gotten more contagious. But there are still tons of people who just seem to be immune to COVID. Now, researchers from around the world say they're on a mission to figure out why. CNBC's Meg Terrell reports on how scientists could use that data to help others.
When the first COVID wave hit New York City in the spring of 2020, nurse Bevan Strickland answered the call to help.
They looked at us who had just shown up to help and they said, you know, you're in the epicenter, so you pretty much need to accept right now that you will get COVID.
She was convinced she'd get infected.
It was blatant exposure, hundreds of patients. And I was kind of shocked that I didn't get it.
Strickland is exactly the kind of person Dr. Jean-Laurent Casanova of Rockefeller University is looking to study.
We're trying to identify people who've been at home or at work exposed repeatedly to the virus, the SARS-CoV-2, and have not been infected.
He's part of an international group called the COVID Human Genetic Effort, which is trying to identify something in the genes that makes people resistant to the virus. Casanova says these have been identified before with malaria, HIV, and norovirus. People with mutations in a gene known as CCR5, for example, are resistant to HIV.
Building on this discovery, drugs that block CCR5 have been developed to slow down HIV infection.
Casanova's lab already identified markers that make people more susceptible to severe COVID. But the hope is that this study could lead to new medicines that could bring these potential and rare genetic gifts of resistance to the rest of the world.
If it contributes at all to contributes to preventative medicine for this illness and any others, and definitely prevention, prevention and treatment, that would be amazing because it was so just devastating.
Now, the timelines on work like this are long, years or even longer. And while some signals have already shown up in previous studies, like having type O blood, scientists don't put a huge amount of stock in that finding. This group is still looking for more participants at COVIDHGE.com. And they say volunteers will get to learn about their own genetic resistance if they have it.
COVIDHGE.com. I hope we learn as much as we can about this. Meg, thank you very much, Meg Terrell. Do high school students need more shut-eye? New Jersey, just one state working to make that happen. We talk with one of the lawmakers behind the idea. And your next American Airlines flight might be on a bus, the service the company is pitching as a better way to travel. A plane crash landing in the middle of a major Georgia highway. Take a look at this. It's dash cam footage from a driver right when the plane went down. You see it gliding, skid across the road, and then crash right into the median. It happened in Kennesaw, about an hour north of Atlanta. The Cobb County Department of Transportation reports the plane went down around 10 a.m. About 2 hours later, the department reported the highway was fully back open, no cars damaged. This is the plane after the wreck. Police said only one pilot was on board. They say he walked away from the wreck and declined medical treatment. Federal investigators said the pilot had reported engine problems after taking off. The FAA conducting a crash investigation. And getting up for school, it's the most brutal part of most teenagers' mornings. But for some high school students, it could get a little bit easier. There's a growing push nationwide to move high school start times back. Education Department data shows the average public high school start time is around 8 a.m. The earliest, 7:30. That's in Louisiana. But just last month, the Philadelphia School District pushed high school start times to 9 a.m. for the coming fall. Officials say the later start will help students be more alert and more ready to learn. Now some New Jersey lawmakers are looking to follow suit. They're sponsoring a bill that looks to push the statewide high school start time to no earlier than 8:30. New Jersey Senator Vin Gopal is with us now. He's one of the bill's co-sponsors. Senator, welcome. And why not 9 a.m.?
Thank you so much. The studies show that there's a direct correlation between mental health and our education in our schools. 8:30 is what a lot of the studies, the American Association of Pediatrics, the CDC, and many others recommend.
So I guess the question is, how are teachers going to respond to all of this, school administrators? So far, what have you heard? How likely do you think the chances are for something like this to pass?
Very positive. Here in New Jersey, along with myself and Speaker Coughlin, it has a lot of support. And towns have already started doing it. Many school districts have already started, have had a lot of success. And mental health was a really big issue that came up during the COVID pandemic. So this is front and center, and I think we're going to get this done here in New Jersey.
It does create a ripple effect, though. One New Jersey superintendent is warning there could be a domino effect disrupting the busing schedules, after-school sports, even childcare for parents who need those older kids to watch younger ones. What do you say?
The school districts who have done it, and many have already done it on their own. We had a town in Morris County in North Jersey that did it, and it only extended the school day by about 20 to 25 minutes because they cut many of their classes and lunch by a minute or two, and they made up the time. So the studies are overwhelming. The CDC recommends that a teenager has at least 8 hours of sleep, and the studies have all shown that 3 out of every 4 teenagers get less than that. And that directly impacts not just their mental health, but their education quality. So with any idea that comes up, there's going to be hurdles, but we're going to move through it. And I'm confident we're going to get this done.
And why just high schools? What about middle school or younger?
So the studies that we've gotten directly from CDC and the American Association of Pediatrics say that this really takes into effect teenagers. They're the ones who are staying up late. They're the ones who are not getting as much sleep. And they're the ones who are really getting into that adolescent stage of a growing body, and they need it the most. And they're the ones that are not taking advantage of that sleep that's needed. So that's why we're starting there.
Vin Gopal, thanks. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill are seeking to crack down on the chaos in the skies. They've introduced a bipartisan bill that would create a no-fly list for violent plane passengers. It's dubbed the Protection from Abusive Passengers Act. The bill would place people convicted of assaulting crew members on a TSA-maintained list. Right now, an individual airline can ban someone from flying on their flights, but that person could still jump on a different airline. This no-fly list would change that. It would make it so that the convicted person basically couldn't fly at all. We've shown you dozens of examples, like this one from February. Witnesses say a passenger tried to breach the cockpit and open the flight door mid-flight. According to the FAA, there have been more than 1,000 reports of unruly passengers just so far this year. This new bill gaining support from a number of aviation-related unions, as well as airlines. Meantime, American Airlines wants to replace some flights out of Philadelphia with a bus. The airline announced plans today to use buses to connect flights between Philadelphia International Airport and two airports nearby. One of them is Lehigh Valley International near Allentown, PA. It's just an hour and a half away. The other, Atlantic City International, even closer, about an hour's drive. American teaming up with the ground transportation company Landline for the deal. The service expected to start in June. Landline has similar deals in place with United Airlines and Sun Country Airlines. And will it be the comeback golf fans are hoping for? Tiger Woods back on the green at Augusta after a car crash that nearly cost him a leg. Two golf legends weigh in on the first round of the Masters and if they think Tiger can win. And after a lockout and weeks of negotiations, baseball's opening day finally underway. The new rules in place as teams head back to the field. Long last, baseball finally back. Opening day, a week behind schedule because of the 99-day lockout. But some teams will have to wait a little longer before they can play ball. Two openers were postponed due to bad weather, the Red Sox-Yankees game and the Seattle Mariners against the Minnesota Twins. Both games rescheduled for tomorrow, and they'll be played a little differently this season. As part of the agreement to end the lockout, the MLB expanding the designated hitter rule to the National League. That means pitchers' place in the batting order gone. There's also a big change in Cleveland. Today, the ball club played their first game as the Guardians. They played as the Indians for more than a century. The Guardians lost 3-1 against the Kansas City Royals. Only one thing could overshadow opening day, and that's Tiger Woods back at Augusta for the Masters. Today, he shot a 1-under 71 in the opening round. He's currently 4 strokes behind the leader. This is Tiger's first major tournament since he crashed his car more than a year ago and shattered his leg. He was going nearly double the speed limit, and to this day, we don't know why. Tiger scheduled to tee off tomorrow afternoon as he looks to win his 6th green jacket. Earlier, we spoke to golf legends Gary Player and Tom Watson at Augusta about Tiger's return to the Masters. Gary, do you think Tiger has a real shot? How surprised are you that he has made it back on this course this quickly after his terrible injury?
I admire the fact that he's come back so soon. You must remember that Tiger Woods is a very special person with a very special work ethic, something that seems to be dying across the world at the moment. He is a man who's up at 4 o'clock in the morning because he has, as he told me, he has a bit of sleep deprivation. So he's up working on his body. And if you just look, I mean, his body looks fantastic after such a long layoff. And the whole world is watching this with great anxiety. And we're all hoping that he'll really do well because he's so valuable to golf worldwide.
Tom, as I understand it, it's the walking that can cause him a lot of pain, a lot of discomfort, as much as it is the actual, you know, golf swings and playing itself.
Well, I don't know what type of pain he's in, honestly. So I've seen him limp. He's limping noticeably, but he limped pretty noticeably when he won the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines.
You both have won the Masters multiple times. How extreme is the pressure?
Well, it takes a very good putting, and it takes keeping out of trouble. Yeah, that's what you have to do. Keep it out of the water at 12. I think that's the critical shot, Gary, don't you?
If you look at the number of players throughout history who've just ruined their chances of winning the Masters by knocking it in the water at 12, quite honestly, I might have, but I don't ever remember knocking it in the water there. My underwater stroke is lousy. And the other thing is that I think, Tom, what you said, you put it in a different way. You mentioned course management and certain holes. Putting is always the crucial thing. What wins golf tournaments is not long hitting, as everybody's inclined to think. It's your mind, and it's also how you putt. It's a little thing called it. In my 72 years of playing golf, I've seen about 20 players that have got it. You cannot define it. What it is, so we try to find that out so we can bottle it. But Tom Watson had it. Nicholas had it. Hogan had it. Snead had it. You know, actually the player that has it on the tour at the moment is Jordan Spieth. If he gets his swing right, he'll be number one in the world. So it's a fascinating subject, golf. We all know a hell of a lot about nothing.
All right. On a much more somber note, both of you have lost your wives to pancreatic cancer. Gary, this is your first Masters without Vivian, and we're so sorry for your loss. Does pancreatic cancer, which also took the lives of Steve Jobs and Arne Sorensen, the CEO of Marriott, does it get enough attention? And how have you been working to raise money and awareness?
We had a day at Glen Arbor, a course I designed up in New York for pancreatic cancer, and Tom very kindly joined. Because we were both married to wonderful women. And, you know, when you've got a great wife in life, it's just such a blessing. If you get a good wife, it's a lot of luck nowadays, I guess, according to the divorce rate. But no, really, in Omaha, they're doing marvelous work for cancer and pancreatic cancer. They sincerely believe in 10 years, we'll have it licked. But I really think we must do more and make greater efforts to teach young people how to eat properly and to exercise properly. Obesity is causing most of the world's diseases at the moment.
How many push-ups can you still do in a row, Gary?
I don't do push-ups. I do hundreds and hundreds of sit-ups. That to keep your core going, because as you get older, the stomach, you know, a lot of people don't see their knees after they get to 60.
Tom, finally to you, have you been frustrated by the lack of advancement, if that's how you would describe it, in treating and eventually, hopefully one day, curing pancreatic cancer?
When my wife is diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, the diagnosis is very grim because only 6% of the people who contract pancreatic cancer survive 5 years. And that was the odds were stacked against us. And we had a brief spell there where she was designated cancer-free. Heart disease is number one cancer, is number two killer in the world. There are all sorts of different cancers that are very hard to treat. And pancreatic cancer is about the toughest.
Our big thanks to Tom and Gary for sharing their time today. A Navy veteran with one arm set to represent the U.S. in archery at this month's Invictus Games in the Netherlands. The games are an international sporting event for wounded, injured, or sick servicemen and women. Gabe George lost the use of his right arm after a motorcycle accident 14 years ago. George says he first fell in love with archery at a VA sports clinic.
When I got injured, you go to this place where you feel like you're just this brittle snowflake. You've realized that you are a snowflake, but they're in a blizzard with other snowflakes that are all got other stuff in the boat, and y'all are powerful together when you come together.
He uses his teeth to pull the bowstring back with the help of a special apparatus. But George says you've got to be careful with which teeth you use.
Back teeth, not front teeth, because front teeth come out quick and easily.
The Navy vet will also be competing in swimming and rowing at the games. Incredibly impressive. He's a certified rescue diver, competitive sailor, and he plays pickleball. Broadway is back and in a big way. The Broadway Grand Gallery was unveiled today in the middle of Times Square. The gallery, made up of giant life-size playbills, Aladdin, Funny Girl, Little Shop of Horrors, there's something for everyone. With 15 new shows expected to hit the Great White Way by the end of this month, the gallery will ultimately feature 21 shows that are currently running. And of course, the day wouldn't have been complete without a little music.
Start spreading the news.
And the gallery will be on display until June 15th. 40 seconds left in a race to the finish. Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson making history as the first black woman confirmed to the Supreme Court. She'll replace Justice Stephen Breyer when he retires at the end of the court's term this summer. And a major rebuke, the United Nations has kicked Russia off the Human Rights Council in response to the mass killing of civilians in the Ukrainian town of Bucha. Two more black coaches joining Brian Flores in his lawsuit against the NFL and several teams. And now you know the news of this Thursday, April 7th, 2022. I'm Kelly Evans in for Shepard Smith. Good night.
You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.